Good evening. Welcome to the Just Sleep podcast. I'm Tayshia, your host. Every week, I will read you an old story to help you relax, put the stressful day behind you, and drift off to sleep. Occasionally, we will run ads in order to cover the costs of the production of the podcast. Rest assured, there will be no ads during or after the story. If you prefer an ad-free and intro-free show, you can join Just Sleep Premium. Visit justsleeppodcast.com/support for more information.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Tonight, I'm reading a story from the book The Junior Classics, Volume 3, Tales from Greece and Rome. This story is by Charles Kingsley. The heroes sail away in search of the Golden Fleece. So lie down, close your eyes, and let me read you a story. This is a tale of heroes who sailed away into a distant land to win themselves renown forever in the adventure of the Golden Fleece. Whither they sailed, my children, I cannot clearly tell. It all happened long ago, so long that it has all grown dim, like a dream which you dreamed last year. And why they went, I cannot tell. Some say that it was to win gold. It may be so, but the noblest deeds which have been done on earth have not been done for gold. The Spartans looked for no reward in money when they fought and died at Thermopylae, and Socrates the wise asked no pay from his countrymen, but lived poor and barefoot all his days, only caring to make men good. And there are heroes in our days also who do noble deeds, but not for gold. Our discoverers did not go to make themselves rich when they sailed out, one after another, into the dreary frozen seas. Therefore, we will believe, why should we not, of these same Argonauts of old, that they too were noble men, who planned and did a noble deed, and that therefore their fame has lived and been told in story and in song, mixed up, no doubt, with dreams and fables, and yet true and right at heart. So we will honor these old Argonauts and listen to their story as it stands, and we will try to be like them, each of us in our place. For each of us has a golden fleece to seek, and a wild sea to sail over ere we reach it, and dragons to fight ere it be ours. And what was that first golden fleece? I do not know, nor care. The old Greeks said that it hung in Colchis, which we call the Circassian coast, nailed to a beech tree in the war god's wood, and that it was the fleece of the wondrous ram who bore Phrixus and Helle across the Black Sea. For Phrixus and Helle were the children of the cloud nymph and of Athamas, the Minuan king. And when a famine came upon the land, their cruel stepmother, Ino, wished to kill them, that her own children might reign, and said that they must be sacrificed on an altar to turn away the anger of the gods. So the poor children were brought to the altar, and the priest stood ready with his knife, when out of the clouds came the golden ram and took them on his back and vanished. Then madness came upon that foolish king, Athamas, and ruin upon Ino and her children. For Athamas killed one of them in his fury, and Ido fled from him with the other in her arms, and leaped from a cliff into the sea, and was changed into a dolphin, such as you have seen, which wanders over the waves forever sighing, with its little one clasped to its breast. But the people drove out King Athamas, because he had killed his child, and he roamed about in his misery till he came to the oracle in Delphi. And the oracle told him that he must wander for his sin till the wild beasts should feast him as their guest. So he went on in hunger and sorrow for many a weary day till he saw a pack of wolves. The wolves were tearing a sheep, but when they saw Athamas, they fled and left the sheep for him, and he ate of it, and then he knew that the oracle was fulfilled at last. So he wandered no more, but settled and built a town and became a king again. But the ram carried the two children far away over land and sea till he came to the Thracian Chersonese, and there Helle fell into the sea. So those narrow straits are called Hellespont after her, and they bear that name until this day. Then the ram flew on with Phrixus to the northeast across the sea, which we call the Black Sea now, but the Greeks call it Euxine. And at last, they say, he stopped at Colchis, on the steep Circassian coast. And there Phrixus married Chalciope, the daughter of Aeetes the king, and offered the ram in sacrifice. And Aeetes nailed the ram's fleece to a beech in the grove of Mars, the war god. After a while, Phrixus died and was buried, but his spirit had no rest, for he was buried far from his native land and the pleasant hills of Greece. So he came in dreams to the heroes of the Minuai, and called sadly by their beds, "Come, and set my spirit free, that I may go home to my fathers and to my kinsfolk and the pleasant Minuan land." And they asked, "How shall we set your spirit free?" "You must sail over the sea to Colchis and bring home the golden fleece, and then my spirit will come back with it, and I shall sleep with my fathers and have rest." Often he came thus and called to them, but when they awoke, they looked at each other and said, "Who dares sail to Colchis or bring home the golden fleece?" And in all the country, none was brave enough to try it, for the man and the time were not come. Phrixus had a cousin called Aeson, who was king in Iolcos by the sea. There he ruled over the rich Minuan heroes as Athamas his uncle ruled in Boeotia. And, like Athamas, he was an unhappy man. for he had a stepbrother named Peleus, of whom some said that he was a nymph's son, and there were dark and sad tales about his birth. When he was a babe, he was cast out on the mountains, and a wild mare came by and kicked him. But a shepherd passing found the baby, with its face all blackened by the blow, and took him home, and called him Peleus, because his face was bruised. And he grew up, fierce and lawless, and did many a fearful deed. And at last he drove out Aeson, his stepbrother, and then his own brother Neleus, and took the kingdom to himself, and ruled over the rich Minoan heroes in Iolcos by the sea. And Aeson, when he was driven out, went sadly away out of the town, leading his little son by the hand. And he said to himself, I must hide the child in the mountains, or Peleus will surely kill him, because he is the heir. So he went up from the sea, across the valley, through the vineyards and the olive groves, and across the torrent of the Neros, toward Pelion, the ancient mountain, whose brows were white with snow. He went up and up into the mountain, over marsh and crag, and down, till the boy was tired and footsore, and Aeson had to bear him in his arms, till he came to the mouth of a lonely cave at the foot of a mighty cliff. Above the cliff the snow reefs hung, dripping and cracking in the sun, but at its foot, around the cave's mouth, grew all fair flowers and herbs, as if in a garden, ranged in order, each sort by itself. There they grew gaily in the sunshine, and the spray of the torrent from above, while from the cave came the sound of music and a man's voice singing to the harp. Then Aeson put down the lad and whispered, Fear not, but go in, and whomsoever you will find, lay your hands upon his knees and say, In the name of Jupiter, father of gods and men, I am your guest from this day forth. Then the lad went in without trembling, for he too was a hero's son. But when he was within, he stopped in wonder to listen to that magic song. And there he saw the singer, lying upon bearskins and fragrant boughs, Chiron, the ancient centaur, the wisest of all things beneath the sky. Down to the waist he was a man, but below he was a noble horse, his white hair rolled down over his broad shoulders, and his white beard over his broad brown chest. And his eyes were wise and mild, and his forehead like a mountain wall. And in his hands he held a harp of gold, and struck it with a golden key. And as he struck, he sang, till his eyes glittered, and filled all the cave with light. And he sang of the birth of time, and of the heavens and the dancing stars, of the ocean and the ether and the fire, and the shaping of the wondrous earth. And he sang of the treasures of the hills, and the hidden jewels of the mine, and the veins of fire and metal, and the virtues of all healing herbs, and of the speech of birds, and of prophecy, and of hidden things to come. Then he sang of health, and strength, and manhood, and a valiant heart, and of music, and hunting, and wrestling, and all the games which heroes love, and of travel, and wars, and sieges, and a noble death in fight. And then he sang of peace and plenty and of equal justice in the land. And as he sang, the boy listened wide-eyed and forgot his errand in the song. And at last, old Chiron was silent and called the lad with a soft voice. And the lad ran trembling to him and would have laid his hands upon his knees. But Chiron smiled and said, Call hither your father Aeson, for I know you, and all that has befallen, and I saw you both afar in the valley, even before you left the town. Then Aeson came in sadly, and Chiron asked him, Why camest you not yourself to me, Aeson the Aeolid? And Aeson said, I thought Chiron will pity the lad if he sees him come alone, and I wished to try whether he was fearless and dare venture like a hero's son. But now I entreat you by Father Jupiter, let the boy be your guest till better times, and train him among the sons of the heroes, that he may avenge his father's house. Then Chiron smiled, and drew the lad to him, and laid his hands upon his golden locks, and said, Are you afraid of my horse's hoofs, fair boy? Or will you be my pupil from this day? I would gladly have horse's hoofs like you if I could sing such songs as yours. And Charon laughed and said, Sit here by me till sundown, when your playfellows will come home, and you shall learn, like them, to be a king, worthy to rule over gallant men. Then he turned to Aeson and said, Go back in peace and bend before the storm like a prudent man. This boy shall not cross the Aneros again till he has become a glory to you and to the house of Aeolus. And Aeson wept over his son and went away. But the boy did not weep, so full was his fancy of that strange cave and the centaur and his song and the playfellows whom he was to see. Then Charon put the lyre into his hands and taught him how to play it, till the sun sank low behind the cliff and a shout was heard outside. And then came in the sons of the heroes, Aeneas and Hercules and Peleus, and many another mighty name. And great Charon leaped up joyfully, and his hoofs made the cave resound, as they shouted, Come out, Father Charon, come out and see our game. And one cried, I have killed 2 deer, and another, I took a wild cat among the crags. And Hercules dragged a wild goat after him by its horns, for he was as huge as a mountain crag. And Caeneus carried a bear cub under each arm and laughed when they scratched and bit, for neither tooth nor steel could wound him. And Charon praised them all, each according to his deserts. Only one walked apart and silent, Aesculapius, the too wise child, carrying herbs and flowers, and round his wrist a spotted snake. He came with downcast eyes to Charon, and whispered how he had watched the snake cast its old skin and grow young again before his eyes, and how he had gone down into a village in the vale and cured a dying man with a herb which he had seen a sick goat eat. And Charon smiled and said, To each Minerva and Apollo gave some gift, and each is worthy in his place. But to this child they have given an honour beyond all honours, to cure while others kill. Then the lads brought in wood and split it, and lighted a blazing fire. And the others skinned the deer and quartered them, and set them to roast before the fire. And while the venison was cooking, they bathed in the snow torrent and washed away the dust and sweat. And then all ate till they could eat no more, for they had tasted nothing since the dawn, and drank of the clear spring water. And when the remnants were put away, they all lay down upon the skins and leaves about the fire, and each took the lyre in turn and sang and played with all his heart. After a while, they all went out to a plot of grass at the cave's mouth, and there they boxed and ran and wrestled and laughed till the stones fell from the cliffs. Then Charon took his lyre, and all the lads joined hands, and as he played, they danced to his measure, in and out, and round. There they danced, hand in hand, till the night fell over land and sea, while the black glen shone with their broad limbs and the gleam of their golden hair. And the lad danced with them, delighted, and then slept a wholesome sleep upon fragrant leaves of bay and myrtle and marjoram and flowers of thyme, and rose at the dawn and bathed in the torrent, and became a schoolfellow to the hero's son, and forgot Iolcus and his father and all his former life. But he grew strong and brave and cunning upon the pleasant downs of Pelion in the keen, hungry mountain air, and he learned to wrestle and to box and to hunt and to play upon the harp. And next he learned to ride, for old Charon used to mount him on his back, and he learned the virtues of all herbs and how to cure all wounds. And Charon called him Jason the healer, and that is his name until this day. How Jason lost his sandal. 10 years came and went, and Jason was grown to be a mighty man. Some of his fellows were gone, and some were growing up by his side. Aesculapius was gone to Peloponnesus to work his wondrous cures on men, and some say he used to raise the dead to life. and Hercules was gone to Thebes to fulfill those famous labors which have become a proverb among men. Peleus had married a sea nymph, and his wedding is famous to this day. And Aeneas was gone home to Troy, and many a noble tale you will read of him, and of all the other gallant heroes, the scholars of Chiron the Just. Now it happened on a day that Jason stood on the mountain and looked north and south and east and west, and Chiron stood by him and watched him, for he knew that the time was come. And Jason looked and saw the plains of Thessaly, where the Lapithai bred their horses, and the lake of Boibe, and the stream which runs northward to Peneus and Tempe. And he looked north, and he saw the mountain wall which guards the Magnesian shore, Olympus, the seat of the immortals, and Ossa, and Pelion where he stood. Then he looked east and saw the bright blue sea which stretched away forever toward the dawn. Then he looked south and saw a pleasant land with white-walled towns and farms nestling along the shore of a landlocked bay, while the smoke rose blue among the trees. And he knew it for the Bay of Pagasai and the rich lowlands of Haemonia and Iolcos by the sea. Then he sighed and asked, "Is it true what the heroes tell me, that I am heir of that fair land? And what good would it be to you, Jason, if you were heir of that fair land?" "I would take it and keep it." "A strong man has taken it and kept it long. Are you stronger than Peleus the Terrible?" "I can try my strength with his," said Jason. But Chiron sighed and said, "You have many a danger to go through before you rule in Iolcos by the sea. Many a danger and many a woe, and strange troubles in strange lands such as man never saw before." "The happier I," said Jason, "to see what man never saw before." And Chiron sighed again and said, "The eaglet must leave the nest when it is fledged. Will you go to Iolcos by the sea? Then promise me two things before you go." Jason promised, and Chiron answered, "Speak harshly to no soul whom you may meet, and stand by the word which you shall speak." Jason wondered why Chiron asked this of him, but he knew that the centaur was a prophet and saw things long before they came. So he promised and leaped down the mountain to take his fortune like a man. He went down through the arbutus thickets and across the downs of time till he came to the vineyard walls and the pomegranates and the olives in the glen, and among the olives roared Aneros, all foaming with the summer flood. And on the bank of Aneros sat a woman, all wrinkled, grey and old. Her head shook palsied on her breast, and her hands shook palsied on her knees. And when she saw Jason, she spoke, whining, "Will you carry me across the flood?" Jason was bold and hasty, and was just going to leap into the flood. And yet he thought twice before he leaped. So loud roared the torrent down, all brown from the mountain rains, and silver-veined with melting snow, while underneath he could hear the boulders rumbling like the tramp of horsemen or the roll of wheels, as they ground along the narrow channel and shook the rocks on which he stood. But the old woman whined all the more, "I am weak and old, fair youth. For Juno's sake, carry me over the torrent." And Jason was going to answer her scornfully when Chiron's words came to his mind. So he said, "For Juno's sake, the queen of the immortals on Olympus, I will carry you over the torrent, unless we both are drowned midway." Then the old dame leaped upon his back as nimbly as a goat, and Jason staggered in, wondering, and the first step was up to his knees. The first step was up to his knees, and the second step was up to his waist, and the stones rolled about his feet, and his feet slipped about the stones. So he went on staggering and panting, while the old woman cried from off his back, "Fool, you've wet my mantle. Do you make game of poor old souls like me?" Jason had half a mind to drop her and let her get through the torrent by herself. But Karen's words were in his mind, and he said only, Patience, mother. The best horse may stumble someday. At last, he staggered to the shore and set her down upon the bank, and a strong man he needed to have been, or that wild water he never would have crossed. He lay panting a while upon the bank, and then leaped up to go upon his journey. But he cast one look at the old woman, for he thought, she should thank me once at least. And as he looked, she grew fairer than all women, and taller than all men on earth, and her garments shone like the summer sea, and her jewels like the stars of heaven. And over her forehead was a veil woven of the golden clouds of sunset, and through the veil she looked down on him with great soft heifer's eyes, with great eyes, mild and awful, which filled all the glen with light. And Jason fell upon his knees and hid his face between his hands. And she spoke, I am the queen of Olympus, Juno, the wife of Jupiter. As thou hast done to me, so will I do to thee. Call on me in the hour of need, and try if the immortals can forget. And when Jason looked up, she rose from off the earth like a pillar of tall white cloud, and floated away across the mountain peaks toward Olympus, the holy hill. Then a great fear fell on Jason. But after a while he grew light of heart, and he blessed old Chiron and said, surely the centaur is a prophet, and guessed what would come to pass when he bade me speak harshly to no soul whom I might meet. Then he went down toward Iolcos, and as he walked he found that he had lost one of his sandals in the flood. And as he went through the streets, the people came out to look at him, so tall and fair was he. But some of the elders whispered together, and at last one of them stopped Jason and called to him, fair lad, who are you, and whence come you, and what is your errand in the town? My name, good father, is Jason, and I come from Pelion up above, and my errand is to Peleus, your king. Tell me then where his palace is. But the old man started and grew pale, and said, do you not know the oracle, my son, that you go so boldly through the town with but one sandal on? I am a stranger here, and know of no oracle. But what of my one sandal? I lost the other in Aneros while I was struggling with the flood. Then the old man looked back to his companions, and one sighed and another smiled. At last he said, I will tell you, lest you rush upon your ruin unawares. The oracle in Delphi has said that a man wearing one sandal should take the kingdom from Peleus and keep it for himself. Therefore, beware how you go up to his palace, for he is the fiercest and most cunning of all kings. Then Jason laughed a great laugh like a war horse in his pride. Good news, good father, both for you and me. For that very end I came into the town. Then he strode on toward the palace of Peleus, while all the people wondered at his bearing. And he stood in the doorway and cried, come out, Peleus the valiant, and fight for your kingdom like a man. Peleus came out wondering, and, who are you, bold youth? He cried. I am Jason, the son of Aeson, the heir of all this land. Then Peleus lifted up his hands and eyes and wept, or seemed to weep, and blessed the heavens which had brought his nephew to him, never to leave him more. For, said he, I have but three daughters and no son to be my heir. You will be my heir then, and rule the kingdom after me, and marry whichsoever of my daughters you shall choose. Though a sad kingdom you will find it, and whosoever rules it, a miserable man. But come in and feast. So he drew Jason in, whether he would or not, and spoke to him so lovingly and feasted him so well that Jason's anger passed. And after supper his three cousins came into the hall, and Jason thought that he should like well enough to have one of them for his wife. But at last he said to Peleus, why do you look so sad, my uncle? And what do you mean just now when you said that this was a doleful kingdom, and its ruler a miserable man? Peleus sighed heavily again and again and again, like a man who had to tell some dreadful story and was afraid to begin. But at last, For 7 long years and more have I never known a quiet night, and no more will he who comes after me, till the golden fleece be brought home." Then he told Jason the story of Phrixus and of the golden fleece, and told him too, which was a lie, that Phrixus's spirit tormented him, calling to him day and night. And his daughters came and told the same tale, for their father had taught them their parts, and wept, and said, "Oh, who will bring home the golden fleece, that our uncle's spirit may rest, and that we may have rest also, whom he never lets sleep in peace?" Jason sat a while, sad and silent, for he had often heard of that golden fleece, but he looked on it as a thing hopeless and impossible for any mortal man to win. But when Peleus saw him silent, he began to talk of other things, and courted Jason more and more, speaking to him as if he was certain to be his heir, and asking his advice about the kingdom. Till Jason, who was young and simple, could not help saying to himself, "Surely he is not the bad man whom people call him. Yet why did he drive my father out?" And he asked Peleus boldly, "Men say that you are terrible and a man of blood, but I find you a kind and hospitable man, and as you are to me, so I will be to you. Yet, why did you drive my father out?" Peleus smiled and sighed. "Men have slandered me in that, as in all things. Your father was growing old and weary, and he gave the kingdom up to me of his own will. You shall see him tomorrow and ask him, and he will tell you the same." Jason's heart leaped in him when he heard that he was to see his father, and he believed all that Peleus said, forgetting that his father might not dare to tell the truth. "One thing more there is," said Peleus, "on which I need your advice, for though you are young, I see in you wisdom beyond your years. There is one neighbor of mine, whom I dread more than all men on earth. I am stronger than he now, and can command him, but I know that if he stay among us, he will work my ruin in the end. Can you give me a plan, Jason, by which I can rid myself of that man?" After a while, Jason answered, half laughing, "Were I you, I would send him to fetch that same golden fleece. For if he once set forth after it, you would never be troubled with him more." A bitter smile came across Peleus's lips, and a flash of wicked joy into his eyes, and Jason saw it and started. And over his mind came the warning of the old man, and his one own sandal, and the oracle, and he saw that he was taken into a trap. But Peleus only answered gently, "My son, he shall be sent forthwith." "You mean me?" cried Jason, starting up, "because I came here with one sandal?" And he lifted his fist angrily, while Peleus stood up to him like a wolf at bay. And whether of the two was the stronger and the fiercer, it would be hard to tell. But after a moment, Peleus spoke gently. "Why then so rash, my son? You, and not I, have said what is said. Why blame me for what I have not done? Had you bid me love the man of whom I spoke, and made him my son-in-law and heir, I would have obeyed you. And what if I obey you now, and send the man to win himself immortal fame? I have not harmed you or him. One thing at least I know, that he will go, and that gladly, for he has a hero's heart within him, loving glory and scorning to break the word which he has given." Jason saw that he was entrapped, but his second promise to Charon came into his mind, and he thought, "What if the centaur were a prophet in that also, and meant that I should win the fleece?" Then he cried aloud, "You have well spoken, cunning uncle of mine. I love glory, and I dare keep to my word. I will go and fetch this golden fleece. Promise me but this in return, and keep your word as I keep mine. Treat my father lovingly while I am gone, for the sake of all-seeing Jupiter, and give me up the kingdom for my own on the day that I bring back the golden fleece." Then Peleus looked at him and almost loved him in the midst of all his hate, and said, "I promise, and I will perform. It will be no shame to give up my kingdom to the man who wins that fleece." Then they swore a great oath between them, and afterward both went in and lay down to sleep. But Jason could not sleep for thinking of his mighty oath and how he was to fulfill it all alone and without wealth or friends. So he tossed a long time upon his bed and thought of this plan and of that, and sometimes Phrixus seemed to call him, in a thin voice, faint and low, as if it came from far across the sea. Let me come home to my father's and have rest. And sometimes he seemed to see the eyes of Juno and to hear her words again. Call on me in the hour of need, and see if the immortals can forget. And on the morrow he went to Peleus and said, Give me a victim that I may sacrifice to Juno. So he went up and offered his sacrifice. And as he stood by the altar, Juno sent a thought into his mind, and he went back to Peleus and said, If you are indeed in earnest, give me 2 heralds, that they may go round to all the princes of the Minuai, who were the pupils of the centaur with me, that we may fit out a ship together and take what shall befall. At that Peleus praised his wisdom and hastened to send the heralds out, for he said in his heart, Let all the princes go with him, and like him never return, for I shall be lord of all the Minuai and the greatest king in Greece.
Good night.